the focus, as if someone had twisted a camera lens the wrong way. I put out a hand to grasp the edge of the hatchway, my knees suddenly rubbery. I heard someone ask, "What's the matter?" Everything was spinning madly around me. "I feel kind of woozy," I heard my own voice say. That's the last thing I remember. Collapse. I opened my eyes to see Dr. Waller, Rodriguez, and Marguerite bending over me. They all looked grim, worried. "Do you know where you are?" Waller asked, the lilt in his voice flattened by concern. I looked past their intent faces and saw medical monitors, green worms crawling across their screens. I heard them beeping softly and smelled antiseptic. "The infirmary," I said. My voice was little more than a croak. "Good," Dr. Waller said approvingly. "Full consciousness and awareness. That's very good." Marguerite looked relieved. I suppose Rodriguez did too. It didn't take much mental acumen to see that I was lying on the infirmary's one bed. Located back at the tail of the gondola, the infirmary was the only place on Hesperus with space enough for people to stand at bedside. Our bunks were nothing more than horizontal closets. "What happened?" I asked, still not feeling strong enough to do anything but lie there. "Your anemia came up and bit you," said Dr. Waller. I glanced at Marguerite. I had never mentioned my condition to her, but apparently Waller had told her everything while I was unconscious. She looked concerned, but not surprised. Rodriguez had known about it, of course, but he still looked very worried, his forehead wrinkled like corduroy. "But I've been taking my shots," I said weakly.
"And engaging in more physical exertion than you have ever done in your life, I should think," said the doctor cheerily. "The hard work caught up with you."
"A few hours."
"It was enough. More than enough."
Talk about depressing news.
Here I thought I was doing my share, working alongside Rodriguez and even Duchamp, facing the same dangers and duties as the rest of the crew. And my God-cursed anemia strikes me down, shows everybody that I'm a weakling, a useless burden to them all. Father was right. I'm the runt of the litter in every imaginable way. I felt like crying, but I held myself together as Waller fussed around me and Rodriguez left, half apologizing that he had to get back to the bridge.
"We're getting ready to enter the next cloud deck," he said. "We decided just to skim in and out, take some samples of the cloud droplets and see if there are any bugs in them."
I nodded weakly. "Good thinking."
"It was Dee's idea. Captain Duchamp's."
I turned my head slightly toward Marguerite.
"It's a good thing we brought a biologist along with us," I said.
She smiled.
Rodriguez grabbed my hand and said, "You take care of yourself now, Van. Do what the doc tells you."
"Sure," I agreed. "Why not?" He left. Marguerite remained at my bedside.
"How long will I have to stay here?" I asked Dr. Waller.
"Only a few hours, I should think," he replied, his face as somber as ever. "I'm running diagnostics on your red cell count and oxygen transfer to your vital organs. It shouldn't take very long."
I pushed myself up to a sitting position, expecting to feel my head spin. Instead, it felt fine. Marguerite hurriedly pushed up my pillows so I could sit back against them.
"You make a good nurse," I said to her.
I actually felt pretty good. My voice was coming back to its normal strength.
"You scared the wits out of everyone, collapsing like that."
"How should I have collapsed?" I joked. "Humor," said Dr. Waller. "That's good. A certain sign of recovery."
"There's nothing really wrong with me," I said, "except this damned anemia."
"Yes, that's true. Except for the anemia, you are in fine physical condition. But as Mercutio says to Romeo, the wound may not be as deep as a well or as wide as a church door, but 'tis enough, 'twill serve."
Marguerite understood.
"You have to be careful, Van. Your condition could become serious if you don't take proper care of yourself."
There was a part of me that was perfectly happy to be lying on a sick bed and having her looking so concerned about me. But how long would that last, I asked myself. I've got to get up and be active. I don't want pity, I want respect.
"What you're telling me," I said sharply to the doctor, "is that if I have to do any serious physical exertion, I should take extra enzyme shots."
He nodded, but pointed out glumly,
"We only have a fixed amount of the enzyme supply in our medical stores, and we do not have the equipment or resources to make more. Your supply is more than adequate for normal usage, with a healthy additional amount in reserve. But still,
You should pace yourself more carefully than you have today, Mr. Humphreys.
Yes, of course. Now, when can I get up and back to my work?
He glanced at the monitors lining the infirmary's wall.
In 2 hours, more or less.
2 hours, I said.
Fine.
I was actually on my feet much sooner. I had to be. Marguerite brought me a handheld computer to work with while I sat in the infirmary bed, waiting for Dr. Waller to finish his diagnostics. He left the infirmary for a while, humming to himself as usual. I checked with IAA headquarters back in Geneva, and some 10 minutes later got a reply that Fuchs had entered the second cloud deck more than an hour earlier. He was ahead of us again, and apparently he had suffered no damage from the bugs that had attacked our gas envelope.
Why not?
Was his Lucifer made of different materials? Had he been damaged and then repaired his ship more quickly than we had been able to do? Sitting there, staring at the printed IAA report, I began to wonder what would happen if Fuchs actually did get to the surface first and recovered Alex's remains. He'd get Father's $10 billion in prize money, and I'd be penniless. Totally cut off. I couldn't even afford my home in Mallorca, let alone the apartments I maintained here and there. I wondered what my friends would do. Oh, they'd put up with me for a while, I supposed. After all, it would be egregiously impolite to just drop me immediately because I'd lost all my money. But sooner or later, they'd turn away from me. I was under no illusions about that. They were my friends because I was their social equal, or, for many of them, because I had the money to support their operas and plays and dabbles at scientific research. Penniless, I would also become friendless quite quickly. Gwyneth couldn't afford to stay with me. She needed someone to pay her bills. What would Marguerite do? I asked myself. I couldn't see her abandoning me because I'd become poor. On the other hand, I couldn't see her supporting me either. We didn't know each other that well, really. And besides, I doubted that she had the kind of money it would take to support me. That's what was whirling through my mind as I sat on the infirmary's lone bed, waiting for Dr. Waller to come back from wherever he'd disappeared to and give me permission to get... The ship lurched. I mean lurched. We had bounced and shuddered when we were in the super-rotation winds up higher. But once we'd sunk down to the clear region between the first and second cloud decks, the air pressure had become so thick that the winds were smothered and our ride had become glassy smooth. But now everything suddenly tilted so badly that I was nearly thrown off the bed. I clutched its edges like a child riding a coaster down a snowy hillside. Through the closed hatch of the infirmary I could hear alarm bells blaring and the thundering slams of other hatches swinging shut automatically. The infirmary seemed to sway. For an instant I thought I was getting dizzy again, but then I remembered that I was in the tail section of the gondola, and it was the gondola itself that was swinging beneath the gas envelope. Somewhere an alarm siren started shrieking. I jumped out of bed, glad that Waller hadn't stripped off my coveralls. The floor beneath me tilted again, this time pointing downward like an airplane starting to dive. Something behind me crashed to the floor. "All hands, strap in," the intercom blared. Great advice. I had to clutch the bed to keep from sliding down to the infirmary hatch. The hatch swung outward and banged against the bulkhead. Dr. Waller was on the other side, his red-rimmed eyes wide with terror.
"We're sinking," he screamed. "The gas shell has collapsed."
Sinking. For what seemed like a century, I just hung there, clutching the bed while alarms hooted and wailed all along the gondola, staring at Waller as he held onto the hatch frame with both his hands. In the hollow of my stomach, I could feel the ship dropping.
"All hands to the airlock," the intercom speakers blared. "Get into your spacesuits now."
It was Duchamp's voice, sharp as a surgeon's scalpel. Not panicked, but certainly urgent enough to make me move. "Come on," I said as I stumbled past Waller. He seemed frozen, mouth gaping, eyes goggling, unwilling or unable to let go of the hatch frame and start downhill toward the airlock. I grabbed his shoulder and shook him hard.
"Come on," I shouted at him. "You heard the captain. That means everybody."
"But I can't breathe in my spacesuit," he said, nearly in tears. "The one time I had to use it, I nearly suffocated."
"That doesn't matter now," I said, yanking him free. "Come with me. I'll show you how to do it."
The ship seemed to straighten out somewhat as we staggered and weaved down the passageway. We had to manually open hatches every